Okay, good morning. As always, the weekly shiur in Maseches Megillah is dedicated by Gary and Toby Greenstein in memory of their son Yomi, Yosef Menachem Ben Gershon. And the weekly breakfast is sponsored by Bagel Munch, Lili Nishmas Shimon Ben Zev, and Fega Bas Chaim. Okay, we are doing Megillah Daf Chaf Tes. We're very close to the end. I think, only two or three more blot. And we're starting at the very last word on Daf Chaf Ches Amud Beis, Tanu Rabbanan, which goes up to the top of Chaf Tes Amud Aleph. So Tanu Rabbanan, our rabbis learned, Mevatlin Talmud Torah Lo Tzas Ameis Lo Achnasas Hakala. It's permissible, and maybe it's even obligatory, the Shita Mekubetzas and Ksubos, which is the other place where this sugya appears, quotes the Machlokas Rishonim as to whether it's obligatory or whether it's just permissible. But one way or another, you can be mevatel Talmud Torah. You can stop your learning in order to perform these two mitzvahs. Hatzas ameis, to accompany a nifter, a meis, for a levaya. Lachnasas a kala, to accompany a kala, to help a kala get married. So Amru alav al Rav Yehuda bar Ilai, shrei mevatel Talmud Torah, hatzas ameis, lachnasas a kala. So they said about Rav Yehuda bar Ilai that he fulfilled this mandate. He stopped his learning in order to accompany a dead person, levaya, and also to accompany a bride. But medvar mamurim, however, this is limited. That's only b'she'in sham kol tzarko. That's only in a situation where there aren't enough people. I think we're talking exclusively about a levaya, where there aren't enough people attending the levaya. Avayesham called Sarka, where there are already enough people there anyway, in Mevatlin, then you don't have to stop your Torah learning in order to join the Levaya. The Kama called Sarko, and how much is the required amount? At what point do you no longer have to join the group? Amarav Shmuel Bar Inish Mishmei Derav Derav, in the name of Rav, they said, Tracer Alpe Gavre, 12,000 people. That's a lot of people. It's not your typical Levaya. So only when there are 12,000 people, are you now exempt or no longer permitted to stop your learning in order to accompany the Levaya? Vishisa Alpe Shipure, and 6,000 Shipure, which is like horn blowers. They used to blow horns in order to, as part of the Levaya. So it's 12,000 people, 6,000 horn blowers. V'amriwa, and some say, Tracer Alpe Gavre Uminayu Shisa Alpe Shipure, 12,000 people, of which 6,000 are the horn blowers. So it's either a total of 18,000 or a total of 12,000, 6,000 horn blowers. Ulam, or a different opinion, is cited by Ula, saying, Kagon de Chaitse Gavre me Avua ad Sichra, a line of people from Avua, from this specific place, the Shara Yerashi says, the city gates, ad Sichra, to the cemetery, meaning enough people to kind of line the pathway from the city to all the way to the outskirts of the cemetery. That's when you know you have enough people for the Levaya, and when you can no longer be Mevatel Talmud Torah to accompany the Levaya. Rav Shesha Samar, and here's where we get a hint of the fact that all this discussion until now has just been for a Talmud Chacham, for someone who is a real Talmud Chacham. That's when these numbers are so high. So Rav Shesha Samar, Kinesinasa Kach Netilasa. Just like it was given, so too it's taken away. Manasinasa b'shishim ribo. Just like the Torah was given in the presence of 600,000 people, shishim ribo, 60 times 10,000, 600,000 people. Ach netilasa b'shishim ribo. He says the number now is 600,000, at least for a Talmud Chacham, because it's parallel. The way the Torah was given with 600,000 people there, and so now this Talmud Chacham died, so it's in effect being taken away, so to speak, and so it's in parallel the same number of people can need to accompany the Levaya. And Hani Miwi, and that's only Laman Dekari Vitani. That's someone who really learns. Dekari Vitani is someone who learns Psukim and Mishnayas. Avalaman Demasni Wesley Shira, someone who learns Gemara, someone who's a real Talmud Chacham, a serious Talmud Chacham. So then there's not even any Shir. And it's an infinite number of people. You still have to be mevatel your Talmud Torah to accompany that levaya for a serious Talmud Chacham. Okay, Tanya Rav Shimon Yochai Omer, Borei kama chavivin Yisrael lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Rav Shulman Yochai says, we see how beloved the Jewish people are in front of Hashem. Shevakol makom shegalu shechina imayin. Whenever they were exiled, whenever they were sent away from Eretz Yisrael, the Shechina accompanied them. Golu Mitzrayim, when they went down to Mitzrayim, Shechina imayin. The Shechina accompanied them. And how do we know that? Shenemar hanigoni glesil ve'savicha bi'osam b'Mitzrayim. Here we quote a pasuk in Shmuel Aleph. This is a pasuk when the Navi comes to Eli and complains to him about the corruption of his sons. So he introduces his Musar that he gives to Eli by talking about kind of Jewish history and saying that Hashem was always with the Jewish people. Wasn't I with the Jewish people when they went down to Mitzrayim? So here we see a scriptural source for the idea that when Klal Yisrael was put in Galus, when they were exiled from their homeland, from Eretz Yisrael, Hashem accompanied them even in Mitzrayim. So that's the proof that he accompanied them to Mitzrayim. Golu Bavel, when they left Eretz Yisrael and went to Bavel, during Golus Bavel, Shechina Imayin. Again, Hashem accompanied them. Shenemar l'ma'anchem shalachti Bavela. This is a pasuk from Yeshayahu, talking about that I sent you and I was with you when I sent you to Bavel. Da'af k'shein asidin l'gael, Shechina Imayin. And when in the future they will be exiled, the Shechina will be with them. Shenemar v'shav Hashem alkecha shivusecha, Hashem eshivuscha, Hashem will return your shivus, your exile. Ve'hishivu onamar. It doesn't say ve'hishiv that Hashem will send, ela v'shav. It says that I will go, right, or I will return. Ma'amich HaKadosh Baruch Hu shav imayin mibein agoyos. That implies that when Hashem it says v'shav Hashem l'kecha, that Hashem will return. The implication is if Hashem is returning, it means that Hashem is with them in the Galus, and He's returning with them. It doesn't say v'hishiv and I will send you back to Eretz Yisrael. It says v'shav and I will return, implying that Hashem is with them, the Galus. Okay, the Bach adds the word Shechina. Shechina bevavel heicha. Where is the Shechina in Bavel? When we talk about the Shechina being with the Jewish people during Galus Bavel, what does that mean? Where does the Shechina reside? We know in Eretz Yisrael, the Shechina is within the base of Mikdash. That's where He's most apparent. But where is the Shechina when it comes to being outside of Eretz Yisrael? So Amar Abaye bebe kenishna dehutzal, bebe kenishna deshaf yasiv bin arda. So Abaye says it's the Shechina resides in the shuls. And specifically in the case of Bavel, it's the shuls of Hutzal and the shul of Narda, the Shafi Yasiv, means that it was destroyed and then it was rebuilt. Rashi explains this happened in the days of Yechonya. In any event, the shul in Narda was destroyed and then the shul in Narda was rebuilt. And so the Shechina resides in the shuls in Galus. The Gemara goes on and says, V'lo teima hacha v'hacha, and don't say that means that the Shechina resides in Hutza at the same time that it resides in Narda, ela zimnin hacha v'zimnin hacha. Rather, sometimes the Shechina is in this shul, I guess when the population is dominant in one place, and sometimes the Shechina resides in this shul when the population is dominant in this place. That's where the Shechina is. It's in the shuls. Amar Abaye. Abaye says, Tesiwi, give me some credit. Tichimar chikna parsa ayalna umatzlina hasam. He says, give me credit because when I went on a trip, or I went kind of on a pathway, I went out of my way to go to the shul and daven in the shul, specifically in that shul. Avu deshmo v'levi, havu yasvi b'kenishna deshaf yosef bin arda. So the father of Shmuel and Levi was sitting in the Beis HaKnesses, in the shul that was destroyed and that had been rebuilt in Arda. Asya Shechina. And all of a sudden, the Shechina appeared. So when we say that the Shechina is in the shuls, it doesn't mean figuratively. It's literally here in this story, at least. Some form of the Shechina appeared to them. And Shamu Kol Riksha, and they heard a loud bang. They heard a loud noise, which was the Shechina, apparently. Some Kamu V'nakva, they got up and they ran away. They were scared. A similar story, Rav Sheshes, Hava Yosef, Bebe Kenishna. So keep in mind, Rav Sheshes was blind, Rashi points out. Rishesh was blind, and he was sitting in the shul de Shafi Yosef ben Arda, in this same shul that had been destroyed and that was rebuilt in Arda. The Gilyon HaShas, by the way, points out when the Gemara keeps on referring to the shul that was in Arda. So the Gilyon HaShas, Rabbi Akiva Eiger points out, he points you to the Ramban in Ksubas, and the Ramban in Ksubas points out that Arda was the main place of Bavel. That was like the most holy place. That was where the most learning was going on, the most davening was going on. So that's why we keep on referring to this specific shul in Arda. So anyway, Rav Sheshes was sitting in the shul in Arda. As Yashchina velo nafak. So the Shechina came, and unlike Avua Deshmo Velevi, who got scared and ran away, Rav Sheshes sat there. He wasn't startled by the presence of the Shechina in the shul. So Azu Malachi Ashares v'kamivasule. So the Malachi Ashares, I guess, kind of viewed this as a challenge, and they said, Rav Sheshes seems so placid here, let's shake him up. And they came and they tried to scare him away. So Amar Lufanov, Rav Sheshes responded by saying in front of the Malachi Ashares, Ribono Sholom, he said, Hashem, Olav v'sheino Olav, mi didchem mipnei mi. He basically said, have some mercy on me. I'm a blind person. I'm handicapped. Someone who's handicapped and someone who's not handicapped, like these Malachi Asharis, they're not handicapped at all. They can float in and out of a shul, and I'm here sitting here, I'm blind. Who should be, who should get precedence? I'm, you know, have a little mercy on me. So Amr Lahu, so Hashem responded by saying to the Malachi Asharis, Shavku, we'll leave him alone. Leave Rav Sheshes alone. Okay, I don't know what the kind of deep meaning of these stories is, other than to kind of demonstrate that in a very real terms, the Shechina was resident in some way in these shuls in Bavel. And we generally assume that also nowadays. The Shechina is in our Mikdash Emat, in shuls. That's kind of holy places. These are places that that are in our upper levels of spirituality. Okay. So the Gemara now quotes a pasuk in Yechezkel, Vayhi lehem l'mikdash mat. This is the source where we always refer to shuls as a Mikdash Mat. It's kind of a mini base amigdash. When we don't have a base amigdash nowadays, the shul is the closest thing we have. So Amrav Yitzchak elu batei kneyosios ubatei midrashos shabababel. Rav Yitzchak says this is referring to shuls and batei midrashos in Bavel. Rav Lazar amar ze beis rabbeinu shabababel. Rav Lazar says this is the house of Rav in Bavel. That's what it's referring to. Darish Rava. Rava Darshan, my dechsiv Hashem, Hashem ma'onat ha'yisalanu, that Hashem, you were a presence for us, you were a place. Eilu batei kneisios ubatei midrashos. Again, another pasuk referring to the importance and the spiritual importance of batei kneisios, of shuls and batei midrashos, the places where we learn. Amar Abaye, mereish hava garisna bebeita umatzlina bebeis kneishta. So Abaye says, in the old days, at first, I used to daven in shul, but I would learn at home. Kevin deshamis l'adukamer David Hashem ahavti mon beisecha. But once I kind of focused on the pasuk in Tehillim, which refers to the fact that Hashem loves shuls, havei garisna bebeikanishta. So I changed my practice, and I didn't only daven in the shuls, but I would also start learning in the shuls. That's when I started learning in the shuls. Again, highlighting the importance of shuls. Tanya Rav Lazar Akfar Omer. Rav Lazar Akfar says, Asidin batei kneisios u batei midrashos shebabavel sheyikbu be'eretz Yisrael. In the future, Lasid Lavo Mashiach comes, so all the shuls and all the batei midrashos in Bavel, in Chutz La'aretz, are going to be uprooted and they're going to fly to Eretz Yisrael, they're going to be put in Eretz Yisrael. Whether this is literally or figuratively, depends on your preference. But what's the source for this? The source is interesting. Shenemar, the pasuk says, Ki katavur baharim kekarmel bayam yavo. So this pasuk is a pasuk in Yirmiyahu, and it talks about Har Tavur and Har Karmel uprooting themselves and reasserting themselves or relocating themselves in Eretz Yisrael. And the Mepharshim explained that what's going on here, this refers to the Medrash, the famous Medrash that Hashem kind of, that all the mountains wanted to have to be like Har Sinai. All the mountains wanted the Torah to be given on Har Sinai, including Har Tavor and Har Carmel. And because they kind of wanted to have the Torah given on them as a consolation prize, because Har Sinai was chosen and the Torah was given on Har Sinai. So as a consolation prize, they were moved to Eretz Yisrael, relocated there. That's why they are located there. So the Gemara says, "Alo dvarim kal v'chomer." Is a kal v'chomer. Ma tavor u'karmel shelo ba'u el l'fisha lomo Torah nikvam be'Eretz Yisrael. By Har Tavor and Har Karmel, theirs was only a temporary yearning for the Torah to be given on them. Right? That was only a one-time historical event that they said, please let the Torah be given on us rather than on Har Sinai. And yet, even though that was just a one-time thing that they wanted the Torah to be given at their location, they merited being uprooted and moved to Eretz Yisrael.
Where were they before?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. Does it say in the pasuk? Let's see. What does the pasuk say? I'm not sure. I don't know. But apparently they were in Chutz La'aretz. So they merited being removed and relocated to Eretz Yisrael just because they wanted at that moment for the Torah to be given on. So Bate Kinosios, Bate Midrashos, Shekorinu Marbitzim Ba'im Torah, Alachas Kam Vakama. So certainly all the more so a Beis Knesses and a Beis Medrash, which is constantly over many years, over a long period of time, hosting Torah learning and hosting davening. So achas kama v'kama, all the more so, they're going to be uprooted and moved to Eretz Yisrael at the time of Yemos HaMashiach. Okay, Darash Bar Kafra, following on the same theme here, Darash Bar Kafra, Maidich Siv, Loma Tiratzdun Harim Gavnunim. The Pasuk in Tehillim says, why do you look askance the you high mountains? And again, this is referring to this idea that the mountains all wanted to have the Torah given on them. So Yatza Bas Kol V'Amra Lahem, Lama Tirtzu Din Im Sinai. Hashem, the Bas Kol, called out, why are you being jealous, or why are you calling out Har Sinai? Kulchem Bali Mumim Atem Eitzal Sinai. You are all Bali Mum, you are all, whereas Har Sinai is this perfect, majestic mountain, you are all somehow Bali Mum. You're of a lesser level. You're somehow what's the word? You're injured in some way. Ksiv Hacha Gavnunim. Right. Basically, Hashem is saying the reason I'm not giving the Torah on you, but rather on Har Sinai, is because you are Bali Mum. You are injured in some way. You're lacking something. And how do we know that? Because the pasuk refers to them as high mountains. Gavnunim. Gavnunim is high. V'ksiv hasam o geven o duck in the parsha that we just read, parsha Smitzora, or Tazria, where it's talking about the nature of leprosy of tzaras. It refers to one of these parts of tzaras as a goven, and that's a play on the word gavnunim, or the words are similar. So gavnunim literally means high mountains, but here it's saying that goven is related to the word. Gavnunim is related to the word gavin by tsaras, referring to some sort of blemish. That was the word I was looking for, blemish. And that's why these mountains didn't merit to have the Torah given on them. Okay. Amar Ravashi. Ravashi says, Shmamina, Haiman diyahir balmumu. This teaches you that someone who's arrogant is considered someone who's blemished. Because again, these mountains were all saying that I'm better than Har Sinai, I should have the Torah given on me. So that idea, that was a display of arrogance, and that's why they're referred to as Bali Mum, as being blemished. Okay. The Mishnah had said, Ein osin oso kapandaria. One of the restrictions about a shul is that you're not supposed to use it as a kapandaria. The Gemara says, my kapandaria. What on earth is a kapandaria? A marava kapandaria kishma. Kapandaria is exactly what it sounds like. My kishma. So what does that mean, kishma? Kaman diyamar adma kifna adri eyo baha. Before I go around this house, or before I go around this row of houses, I'll go through you. So what it's referring to is a shortcut. You're not allowed to use a shul as a shortcut. If you need to go from here to the back of the shul, if you have business on the railroad tracks, you can't go through the shul and through the back door. You should not use the shul as a shortcut. Amar Rav Yavo. So here's one limitation on that rule. Amar Rav Yavo im hayashvil meikara. However, if this was a thoroughfare before the shul was built, people always use this area to go through. So then mutter. Then you kind of the public has acquired an easement in that way, and they get preference over the shul, which is a surprising halacha. You think, once the shul's there, all bets are off. But their prior property right, their proper easement right, takes precedence, and you could actually go through the shul. Amar of Nachum Rav Yitzchak Hanichnas, and here's another limitation. Hanichnas Amnas Shlo Lasos Kapandaria Mutter Lasosu Kapandaria. This happens all the time, right? You walk into a shul with no intention of using it as a shortcut, but then you finish davening, or maybe you don't even finish davening. Maybe you change your mind and you want to go now to the other side of the shul. You want to go out the back door because it's easier. So do you have to worry that it turns out ipso facto at the end that you use the shul as a shortcut? Well, you had no intention of doing so in the beginning. So what he says here is, Rav Nachum Yitzchak says, that if your intention wasn't to use it as a shul, you don't have to now go back out the front door and then go around the back. You can actually follow through and use it as a shortcut, so to speak, because your intention all from the very beginning wasn't to use it as a shortcut.
Well, that's why some people say if you do need to pass through, so you go in, you sit down.
Yeah, that right. That gives rise to that kula.
Right.
That's right. You could go in, sit down, say Ashrei, or I think the Gemara had said that it depends. I think yesterday's or last week's Gemara talked about the fact that it depends on what your level of learning is, right? If you're someone who can only read Psukim, so then you read Psukim. If you're someone who can learn Mishnayos, you sit down and learn Mishnayos. Someone
to your own level.
To your own level, right. Okay. And then picking up on the same theme, Omer of Chelbo, Omer of Huna, Hanichnes l'beis haknesses l'ispalos, someone who goes into shul to daven, mutter asoso kapandaria. Once you already finished davening, so then you can use it as a shortcut. You can go out the back door. You don't have to go out the front. Davka, not to use it as a shortcut. Shnemer u'bevo, amar sifnei Hashem mo'adim, havei derech shar tzafon ishtachavos yotze derech shar negev. So this is a pasuk in Yechezkel, and it's describing actually the way that the Jews used the Beis HaMikdash, and it talks specifically about them going in one way, doing their avoda, and then going out the other way. So you see here that that you don't have to go out of your way specifically not to use it as a shortcut. Once you're already using it for its primary purpose, you can secondarily use it as a shortcut, go out the back door. Okay. The Mishnah then said, "Alu bo asavim lo yitlosh b'pnei agamus nefesh." So the Mishnah was describing a situation of a ruins, a shul that was in ruins, a destroyed shul. It's now sitting in ruins. And the Mishnah said that if weeds start to grow, if grass is growing in the place where the shul used to be, you shouldn't uproot those weeds. You shouldn't mow the lawn, because it should be a visible sign of distress. People should walk by this shul and say, "Oh, what a terrible thing! There are weeds growing there." It should kind of evoke the emotions of the fact that there used to be a shul there and now it's destroyed. Whereas if you mow the lawn, if you make it all look nice, so then it's not quite as jarring to you. So the Gemara says, "Va'atanya, don't we have a brisa that says, Eino toishu machil, aval toishu meniach? The only restriction is on uprooting the grass and feeding it to your animals. That's not respectful to do that in a place where it used to be a shul. Aval toishu meniach, but there's no problem mowing the lawn, removing the weeds and leaving them there, as long as you don't feed them to your animals." So the Gemara answers, "Ki tana nami mas nisin toi shumachil." In fact, we should relearn our Mishnah to mean that when the Mishnah says you shouldn't uproot them, it means you shouldn't uproot these weeds and feed them to your animals. That's not respectful. But it is okay, in fact, to mow the lawn in a place where a shul used to be. Tanan. So we have a Mishnah, or Tanam Tanarabban, we have a Brisa that says, Besa Kfaros, Ein Noagin Bohen Kalos Rosh. So when you go to a cemetery, a Besa Kfaros, you shouldn't act frivolously there. And what are examples? Ein Marin Bohen Behema, you shouldn't bring your animals there to graze. Ein Moichen Bohen Amas Amayim, you shouldn't run a brook or an irrigation canal through there. Ein Malakten Bohen Asavim, and you shouldn't uproot the grass there to feed your animals. Vimlikate. However, if you did uproot grass there, if you did pick the weeds, sorfan bimakoman, you should burn them in place, mipnei kavod mesim, because of kavod hames. That's what you should do. You should burn them in place. And then it says mipnei kavod mesim. So the clause mipnei kavod mesim is kind of ambiguous. What it's what it's modifying. Is it, or what it's referring to? Is it referring to the fact that you burn the grass if you uprooted it, or is it referring to kind of the whole brisa? The Gemara says, ahai, this last three words, mipnei kavan amesim, what's that going on? Is it just referring to iwe ma'aseifa? If it's just referring to the fact that you burn grass if you uprooted it, kevin shesorfan b'mekolon mai kavan amesim ika. The truth is, if you're just burning it there, right there where you picked them, so that's not a public display. You're doing something very privately there. And so that, why is that a description of mipnei kavan amesim? Why is that something that's mipnei kavan ames? So the Gemara says, El Aresha, Mipnei Kavan Mesim is going on the beginning of the Braisa, which says that you generally should not be Noeg Kalas Rosh, you shouldn't act frivolously in a cemetery. That's Mipnei Kavan Mesim. That's what it's referring to. Okay. I saw in this, in Shar Metzion and Halacha, he cites the fact that the Ramah actually brings this down with Halacha, this idea of not using grass or any vegetation that's grown in a cemetery for feeding your animals. What if a cemetery happens to be a good source of animal food, right? Are you actually not allowed to do it? So the Rama says that you can actually benefit from the asavim, from the grass, or from trees. If you have fruit trees in a cemetery, the Rama paskins that you can benefit it. You can benefit from... What does he say? Oh, I'm sorry. For the purpose of the Beis HaKvaros, if you need to raise money for cemetery upkeep, or if you need to use these, I don't know, the grass for fertilizer for other parts of the cemetery, you can get benefit from the grass and the trees, the vegetation in the cemetery property. That refers to any grass and trees that's growing on the actual graves even. You can use those to benefit the cemetery property. And then the Rama goes further and he says that the vegetation within the cemetery property, but that's not growing on the graves itself, that you could use for even any hana. Any hana you could use it for. But then he says, the Shach says that where it's growing on the graves itself, you can't use it for any hana, even for the cemetery itself. And then they talk about, there's a discussion in the poskim of whether there's an exception here for a mitzvah. Let's say, for example, you have trees growing in a cemetery. You want to cut down the trees and use it for schach, for your sukkah. Does that somehow make it a little better? And apparently there are some who say that that's still usser, doesn't make a difference. But then there are others who say, no, that's perfectly fine because it's a zuchus for the mason for you to use vegetation that's growing on their graves to be mekayim mitzvos. It doesn't come up very frequently. I don't know anyone who...
Anything with vegetation or fruit, anything that has to do with a kohen, or that it's from...
That's interesting that a kohen can't touch. I don't think so, because the kohen, I mean, a kohen nowadays don't deal with tumas maga and all that kind of stuff. It's really just tumas ol, and from being in the presence of the mace itself. So once the stuff was cut, it wouldn't really affect the kohen anyway. Okay. The Mishnah says the following. Now we're going to talk, this is actually something that's relevant this time of year on our calendar. The Mishnah says, Rosh Chodesh Adar, we're going to talk about the Arba Parshios and how they fall out in the weeks leading up to Pesach. So Rosh Chodesh Adar, Shechalios B'Shabbos, Korin B'Parshas Shkolim. Mishnah says that if Rosh Chodesh Adar falls on Shabbos, so then we read Parshas Shkolim on that Shabbos. Chalios betocha Shabbos, but in most years Rosh Chodesh Adar falls not on Shabbos itself, but during the week. So then makdimim l'sha'avar. So then you push Parshas Shkolim to the Shabbos before Rosh Chodesh Adar. Umafsikim l'Shabbos acheres, and then there's a break of the next Shabbos, and that's important because we want to make sure that the next of the Arba Parshios, Parshas Zachor, is on the Shabbos immediately preceding Purim. Purim's not going to be till. Right till the 14th of Adar, so you need to skip a Shabbos, and then Bishniya Zachar, and then the next of the Arba Parshios is Parshas Zachar, Bishlishas Para Aduma. On the third Shabbos is Para Aduma, is the Parsha Para Aduma, Parshas Para, or Shabbos Para, Birvias, and then the fourth one is Hachodesh Azelachem, it's Shabbos Hachodesh, Parshas Hachodesh, Bechamishas, Chozrim l'chesidron, and on the fifth Shabbos, which sometimes is Shabbos HaGadol, depending on how this all falls out, that there's no special reading other than the fact that the Haftorah is different, but there's no special maftir. It says Chozrim l'chesidron, you go back to your normal reading of the regular Parshas HaShavua. We'll see soon in the Gemara, that at least the practice back then, at least according to some opinions, was that these special Shabbosim, Parah and Achodesh and Zachar and Shkalim, they actually completely replaced the Parshas HaShavua. So they wouldn't read the normal order that was suspended for those weeks, and the only Kriya would be the special. Nowadays, we just do a special Maftir, and we keep the regular Parshas HaShavua.
What would they read?
What would they read? They would read just those Parshas. Maybe they read longer. I'm not sure. Maybe it was longer versions of it, or maybe it was just that section. Okay, then the Gemara says, the Mishnah says, L'chol mafsikin brashe chadashim b'chanaka u'b'purim b'taniyos v'mambados yom ha-kippurim. So, it says that for these things, when Rosh Chodesh took place on Shabbos, Chanukah, Purim, Taniyos, Mamados, you would read the specific Kriya for those days, and you'd push aside the regular reading.
Maybe they were sure they just had one Sefer Torah and not to have different two words after.
Maybe it was for the rolling it. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure what kind of how the minhag developed in the way it did and why it was different back then. Tosfos here points out that when it's referring to Yom Kippur, it's referring to the mincha of Yom Kippur, Shechalios B'Shabbos. And it's saying that that's the situation, that's what we're referring to when we say that that you switch from the regular Seder and you read the special Kriya of Yom Kippur. Okay, the Gemara says the following. Tinan Hasam. Be'echad of Adar Mashmina Ashkalim. On the first day of Adar, that's when they would start collecting the shkalim, v'al kilayim, and that's when they would also announce. That's when they would also announce or kind of remind people of the that you have to be careful when you plant kilayim, not to plant your seeds too close to together. So why would they do this on Rosh Chodesh Adar? So the Gemara says bishlam al kilayim dizman zriyahi. Makes sense that they would start teaching the people hilchos kilayim this time of year. And specifically Rosh Chodesh Adar, because this is when the weather starts to turn, and this is when you start to plant. And so it was important for the shul rabbi to get up and say, everyone be careful how you plant your seeds. Elal shkolim minoan. Why is it that they would specifically start talking about collecting shkolim on Rosh Chodesh Adar? So Amrav Tebi, Amrav Yoshia, de Amrav Kra, zos alas chodesh b'chadsho. So the pasuk says, This is referring to the Karba Musaf of Rosh Chodesh, right? Amra Torah Chadesh v'ave Karba Mishruma Chadasha. The pasuk is teaching on these psukim that there's this concept of having a new fund each year to fund the Karbanos Tzibur, the Tamidim and the Musafim that are Karbanos Tzibur, that are public offerings. So they're funded by the half shkolim that each person gives. And based on the drushas here and elsewhere, the Rashi points out, we learn that the fund has to be renewed each year. You can't use the funds from the previous year to pay for the carbonos sibor of the following year. There needs to be a cutoff and a new fund each year. V'kevan debenisan b'ayakruva mitruma chadasha kadmina mekarina b'achad b'adar. And since we learn and derive that it's Nisan that we start the Truma Chadasha, that Nisan is the cutoff where we start funding the new Karbanos Sibor from the half shekel that's funded for the new year at Nisan. So Kadminam Vekarinam Be'achad Ba'adar, so we start to warn the people and remind the people, get your half shekelim in order, get ready to donate your half shekelim to the Beis HaMikdash at Rosh Chodesh Adar, about 30 days before. So that people will start bringing their shkolim. So the Gemara says, come on, who is this going like? This is clearly not in accordance with the opinion of Shimon Gamliel, the fact that we start reminding the people 30 days before. D, Rabban Shimon Gamliel, because if we were following Shimon Gamliel here, Hamar Shtei Shabbosos, he's the one who says that you always remind people 2 weeks before, not a month before. In what context does he say that? The Tanya, we have a brayse that says, Sholin b'hilchos ha-Pesach, kodom la-Pesach shloshim yom. The Tanakhama says that you start learning Hilchos Pesach 30 days before Pesach. That's the appropriate time to start preparing for Yontif by learning these halachos. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer Shte Shabbosos. But Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, he's the one who says 2 weeks before. So we see generally that his approach is that you start learning halachos, you start reminding people about something that's coming up 2 weeks before. And so therefore, it seems to reason that when we say that we start announcing Shkolim, and that we read Parsha Shkolim for that matter on Rosh Chodesh Adar, that's too early for Rosh Chodesh. He's the one who says you start 2 weeks before. So the Gemara says, no, afilu teimer b'shem Gamliel. You could even say that our approach of reminding the people of Shkolim already from Rosh Chodesh Adar, that's still consistent with Rav Shimon, or not inconsistent with Rav Shimon Gamliel. Kevan d'amr mar b'chamisha asar bar u'shulchanos yoshvim b'medina u'v'chafhe yoshvim mikdash mishum shulchanos kadmina v'karinan. Because we know that when they collected these half shkolim for the new fund for the next year, they wouldn't collect it all on Erev Pesach, or not Erev Pesach, they wouldn't collect it all on Rosh Chodesh Nisan, right? They would start already collecting it 2 weeks before. It took time for people to pass through and bring their shkolim. So they would, some people say that they would start setting up these shulchanos, these tables, the stations where they would collect the half shkolim already at the 15th of the month, 15th of Adar. And some people say they would start on the 25th of Adar. But it wasn't Rosh Chodesh Nisan when they would start it. And so therefore, if they were collecting it already on the 15th of the month, it makes sense, even according to Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, who says you give him 2 weeks' notice, that they would start reminding them from Rosh Chodesh Adar. Okay. The Gemara says now, my Parshas Shkolim. So we've been talking now about Parshas Shkolim that's read on Rosh Chodesh Adar, or on or about Rosh Chodesh Adar. What is Parshas Shkolim altogether? Which Parsha are we talking about? Rav Amar Tzavis Bnei Yisro V'Amar Telem Hemes Karbani Lachmi. So Rav says it's actually the Parsha of the Musaf of Rosh Chodesh. It's the Parsha of Musaf of Rosh Chodesh. V'Shmuel Amar Kitisa. Excuse me, Shmuel says it's the Parsha that we know as the Parsha Shkolim of Kitisa, where it talks about collecting the half Shkolim. So Bishlon, the Amar Kitisa, Hainu Dekari La Parsha Shkolim. We can understand the opinion, Shmuel's opinion, that it's Kitisa. That's why we call it Parsha Shkolim, because Kitisa is talking about the Shkolim. Dechsiv Bashkolim. Eloman, the Amar Es Karbani Lachmi, but the man, the Amar, who says that it's the pasuk of the Musaf, right? So the Bach gets rid of the word, the next word. So he says, Mide Shkolim Ksivi Hasam. It doesn't even mention Shkolim in that Parsha. Why on earth would we call it Parsha Shkolim if it doesn't mention Shkolim? The answer is in Taima Kedrabi Tabi. We're following the view of Rabbi Tabi, which is what we quoted above, who said that the whole idea is that you're collecting these Shkolim for the new year's round of Karbanos Tzibur, and therefore it's we invoke the parsha of these Karbanos Tzibur in order to, and that's what we're referring to Shkolim. It's kind of indirect. We refer to it as Parsha Shkolim because we're collecting these Shkolim for the Karbanos Tzibur that are going to be offered. So now the Gemara brings another challenge. Bishlomon, the Amar Tzavis, Bnei Yisro, Mishum Tuchsivi, Karbanos, Hasam, Kedrabi Tabi. So I understand the Man Amar who says that it's the Parsha of Tzavis Bnei Yisrael, the Parsha of Karbanos Sibor, because it's talking about the Karbanos. That's on theme with what we're talking about, because you're collecting these Shkolim for these Karbanos. Elo Man Amar Kitisa, Karbanos Miksivi, Shkolim Ladanim Ksivi. But the Man Amar who says that you read the Parsha of Kitisa, it's talking about Shkolim, but it's the wrong kind of shkolim. These are the shkolim in context of the adonim, the sockets of the Mishkan. They were collecting shkolim in order to fund the sockets of the Mishkan. It's completely off topic. It's a different shkolim. It's a different collection. The Gemara's answer is, Kedetani Rav Yosef, Shlosh shalosh trumos hein, shal mizbech u'mizbech, v'shal adonim u'adonim, v'shal bedek habayis u'bedek habayis. So he clarifies that, in fact, That you're right, that specific parsha is explicitly referring to the collection of shkolim for the adonim, but it invokes all three sets of collections of shkolim, because there were three times, or there were three separate collections of shkolim they would make, and one of them was for these karbanos tzibur that we're talking about. Fine, the Gemara brings another challenge. Bishlomam and the Amar Ki Tisa. We understand the Man Amar who says namely Shmuel, who says that the parsha where we read for parsha Shkalim is Kitisa. Hainu deshani hai rosh chodesh mishar rosh chodashim. So now we understand why our Mishnah is referring to specifically Rosh Chodesh Adar as being the Rosh Chodesh of Parsha Shkalim, because it gets its own special Parsha in contrast to all the other Rosh Chodeshim. In all the other Rosh Chodeshim, you read the Parsha of Rosh Chodesh, whereas on Rosh Chodesh Adar, you read the Parsha of Shkalim of Kitisa. That makes sense. That's why we call it Parsha Shkalim. Eloman de'amar tzavis karbani ma'ishonim. But the man there who says that Parsha Shkalim is in fact the same Parsha that you're going to read every other Rosh Chodesh, so what's special? Why are we calling this Parsha Shkalim? What's special about Rosh Chodesh others reading? So Gemara answers, Shani di'ilu Rosh Chodeshim karushisa b'inyana di'yuma v'chad b'drosh Chodesh. So the Gemara answers that no, it's still different. Because on every other Rosh Chodesh that falls out on a Shabbos, you're going to read six aliyahs of the regular Parshas HaShavua, and then you're just going to read Maftir for Rosh Chodesh. You're going to read the seventh Aliyah for Rosh Chodesh, for the special Tzavis Ben Yisrael, the special Parsha of Rosh Chodesh. V'yu Ha'idna, but on this specific Rosh Chodesh, the Rosh Chodesh other, Kulub the Rosh Chodesh. You're going to read the whole, you're going to skip the Parshas HaShavua for that week. Again, this was how they did it back then. They would skip the Parshas HaShavua for Parshas Shkalim, and they would just read the Parsha of Rosh Chodesh. So Gemara now brings another challenge. This Hanichulman di Amar l'Seder Parshios Hu Choser. This all makes sense according to the Man di we're still on the same Mishakov Atarya. So this makes sense. Luman di Amar l'Seder Parshios Hu Choser. This makes sense according to the one who has the Girsa in their Mishnah as saying that after these four Parshios, you go back to the Parshas Shavua, implying that on each of these Dawud Parshios, you completely supplant the Parshas HaShavua with the special reading. But according to the other variant, which is more consistent with our practice, that it's only Maftir and the Haftorah that's different for these Dawud Parshios, but that the rest of the Parshas HaShavua is still read for each of these Dawud Parshios, Parshasa Diyuma Karina, and you still read that same Parsha, Mai Shani. So then why is this different, this Rosh Chodesh other, Parsha Shkalim, different than every other Rosh Chodesh that falls on Shabbos? So Gemara says, Shani Diyu Rosh Chodeshim Karushisa Ben Yana Diyuma V'chad Kari B'di Rosh Chodesh. On every other Rosh Chodesh that falls out on Shabbos, you're going to read six aliyos of the Parsha Shavua and then one of Rosh Chodesh, V'yua Idna, as opposed to this one, Karu Tlasa Ben Yana Diyuma V'arba Karu B'di Rosh Chodesh. Here we're just going to mix it up a little differently. So you read three aliyos of the Parshas HaShavua, Varba, Karu B'Rosh Chodesh, and you read four aliyos of Parshas HaChodesh, of the special reading Rosh Chodesh. Okay, Meisvei. Rosh Chodesh Adar Shechaliyos B'Shabbos. If Rosh Chodesh Adar falls on Shabbos, Koren B'Parshas Shkalim, you read Parshas Shkalim, as we said, and the maftir is the special maftir, the special haftorah, talking about a yoyada hakohen, which is talking about collecting shkolim. So it's keeping with the theme. So bishlaman diomer kitisa hainu b'dimaftirim b'yoyada hakohen. We understand according to Mandiomer says that you read Parshas Kitisa, which is about explicitly about shkolim. So then you read a haftorah that's explicitly about shkolim. The damule the chsiv kesef nefashos arko. It's similar because it's talking specifically about shkolim. Eloman diomer is karban elachmi, by the man diomer who says that the parsha sashkalim is the parsha of the karban of tzibur. So then, me dummy, why would you then read a haftorah which talks about coins when there's no thematic relationship, right? The haftorah of coins has nothing to do with the haftorah about karbanos. So the answer is dummy, because Rabbi Tabi, no, it says there is directly tied, because again, you're bringing you're reading the parsha of the karbanos, because this is the time of year when you start collecting new coins for the new karbanos, and since we're thinking about coins, so the haftorah about coins ties in indirectly. Meisvei. Again, we keep on trying to figure out which one it is. Is it the parsha of Kitisa, or is it the parsha of Tzavis Bnei Yisrael that we read for parsha Shkalim? So Meisvei. Chalios b'parsha smuchola So the Brisa says that if Parsha Shkolim falls out either a week before or a week after we read Kitisa anyway as the Parsha Shavua, or we read that Parsha as the Parsha Shavua, so then don't change the plan. Stick with reading Parshas Shkolim for the Shabbos of Rosh Chodesh, before or after, right? And then just stick with the regular plan of the regular Parshas of Shavuot. In other words, what the Brice is saying is that there may be some years where you end up reading Kitisa twice in a row. I'm giving away the answer. The Brice is saying that there may be times of the year when you end up reading Parshas Shkolim twice in a row, because Parshas Shkolim you're going to read for the Shabbos of the Rosh Chodesh, right? And you're also going to read it in one of those preceding or post-seeding weeks as the regular Parshas HaShavua. So Bishlaman the Amar Kitisa, if you understand Parshas Shkolim to be referring Kitisa, Hainu Dimitri Meiba Huzimna, then it makes sense, this Brisa, because Kitisa happens to fall out around this time of year. And so it's true that you might then read Kitisa twice in a row, 1 week for the Parshas HaShavua, and then you're going to repeat it next week for Parshas Shkolim. But the Mandiyamar who says that Parsha Shkolim is the Parsha of the Karbanos, so then Mimitrimi Behuzimna. The Parsha of Karbanos is in Parshas Pinchas. And Parshas Pinchas isn't anywhere near this time of year. And so the Brisa that says that you might end up reading Parshas, the same Parsha twice in a row, just is not true. So this is clear indication that Parsha Shkolim is not Parshas Pinchas, it's not the Parsha of the Karbanos, but it's the Parsha of Kitisa. The Gemara answers, interestingly, in with Neymarava Damaski with Araisa Bitlashanim. It might be that Parshas Pinchas, or a portion of Parshas Pinchas, falls out around this time of year for the Jews in Eretz Yisrael, where they didn't follow the way we read in Bavel, and nowadays everywhere, we read the Parsha in a yearly cycle, so that we get through all the Parshas, and when you follow the yearly cycle, it's true, Parshas Kitisa falls out around other time, and not Parshas Pinchas. But the way they used to read it in Eretz Yisrael was they had a triennial cycle, so they would read the Parshios on a three-year cycle, and Parshios were all over the place. You couldn't predict necessarily where in the year it would appear, and Parshas Pinchas might actually appear on the calendar around Adar, and therefore you might, in Eretz Yisrael, when you're on that triennial cycle, you might end up reading Parshas Pinchas near Parshas Shkolim, and therefore it's quite possible that Parshas Shkolim is not referring to Kitisa, but is referring to the Parsha of the Karbanos. Okay, Tanya Kavasei de Shmuel. So here we have a Brisa that's similar or consistent with the view of Shmuel, that it's Parshas Kitisa, which says, Rosh Chodesh Rosh Adar Shchalios B'Shabbos Koron Kitisa Maftir B'Yoyada HaKohen. It says explicitly you read from Parshas Kitisa. Amar Rav Yitzchak Nafka, Rosh Chodesh Adar Shchalios B'Shabbos Motzin Shalosh Toros V'Koron B'Hain Echa B'Yano Shayom. You take out three Sifrei Torah if Rosh Chodesh Adar falls on Shabbos itself. The first Torah you read from Parshas HaShavua. V'Echad B'Shav Rosh Chodesh. The second you read from Rosh Chodesh. V'Echad B'Chitisa. And the third you read from Parshas Shkolim. Avraham Rav Yitzchak Nafka, Rosh Chodesh Teves, similar to Rosh Chodesh Teves Shechalios B'Shabbos, if Rosh Chodesh Teves, which happens in the middle of Chanukah, falls out on Shabbos, we do this, right? You also bring out three Sifrei Torah, Mevi'in Shalosh Torahs, V'Korim Bahen, Echa B'Yon Shayom, one you read Parshas HaShavua, V'Echa B'Rosh Chodesh, one you read the Parsha of Rosh Chodesh, V'Echa B'Chanukah, and the third Torah you read from Chanukah, V'Tzricha. And I need, Rav Yitzchak Nafka needed to teach both these halachos, right? We said it with respect to Parshas Shkolim, with Rosh Chodesh Adar, and he said it with respect to Rosh Chodesh Teves, which falls on Chanukah. Why did he have to say both? You'd think that if he said one, you'd know the other. V'tzricha, diyet mar baha, if he only said one, baha kamar Rav Yitzchak, ava baha kirav sviruay da'amar Parshas Shkolim es karbani lachmi, v'shtei Torah sagi kamash mulan. If he had only said one, meaning if he had only taught you the Chanukah one, you might think that maybe he doesn't. You might think that maybe he thinks that the Parsha Shkolim is not the Parsha of Kitisa, but rather the Parsha of the Karbanos, and therefore you kill two birds with one stone. You only have to bring out two Torahs because you're going to read the Rosh Chodesh and the Karbanos. This is the same Parsha, So Kamash Mulan, that he holds like the Mandi Amar, that it's Kitisa, like Shmuel, that it's Kitisa, and that's how he teaches you that. Maybe he should just teach the one about Parshas Shkolim, and then he doesn't need to teach you the point of Chanukah, right? Because then he teaches you now that the Parshas Shkolim is Kitisa, and Chanukah you don't need to learn because you learn it from the Shkolim one. So Chad Mechal Chaverta Itmar, the Gemara answers that it wasn't Rav Yitzchak himself who was saying this; it was someone else who inferred it from his first statement. Tosfos points out that the person who said it, quoted in his name, again, Rav Yitzchak Nafka were saying only taught you the one of Parshas Shkolim. He didn't need to teach you the one of Chanukah because you know that. You know that if you have to bring out three Sifrei Torah when there are three readings on Parshas Shkolim, so it's also true about Chanukah. It's just that someone else quoted it in his name and said that Rav Yitzchak, what would result from Rav Yitzchak Nafka's halacha is that it's true on Chanukah as well. Fine. Itmar, Rav Chodesh Teves Shechalios Bechol. Let's say Rav Chodesh Teves again falls out during the week. This is during Chanukah. Amar Rav Yitzchak Karu Tlasa Rav Chodesh V'chad V'chanukah. You read two Aliyos of Rav Chodesh and one of Chanukah. Rav Dimi Dmin Chaifa Amar Karu Tlasa V'chanukah V'chad Rav Chodesh. This is what we do. You read three of Chanukah and then one for Rav Chodesh. Amar Rav Mani Kavase Rav Yitzchak Nafka Mistabra. I think Rav Yitzchak Nafka got it right. The Tadr, Sheno Tadr, Tadr Kodem, because Rosh Chodesh is more frequent than Chanukah. It falls out more times a year than Chanukah, and therefore Rosh Chodesh should happen first. Rav Avin, Kavasi, Rav Dimi, Mistabra, I think Rav Dimi got it right. Migarim Uravi, Shiava, Rosh Chodesh. The reason we're reading four Aliyos on this day is because of Rosh Chodesh. You would only read three for Chanukah. The reason there's a fourth is because of Rosh Chodesh. Hokoch Ravi, Berosh Chodesh, Bai Mikri. And therefore, we're going to assign the fourth Aliyah, which is there because of Rosh Chodesh, to Rosh Chodesh, and that's in fact what we do. I gave away the answer again. My Havei Elah, so which way do we go? Rav Yosef Amar Ein Mashgichim Rosh Chodesh. Rav Yosef says, we disregard Rosh Chodesh. In other words, Rosh Chodesh is not the Iker. Rav Amar Ein Mashgichim L'Chanukah. We disregard Chanukah. In other words, Chanukah is not the Iker. Rosh Chodesh gets the main. V'Hilchosa Ein Mashgichim L'Chanukah Rosh Chodesh Iker. We disregard Chanukah, meaning we push away Chanukah. And Rosh Chodesh is the Iker, and Rosh Chodesh is the Iker. That's what we give the fourth Aliyah. I don't know. Which way is it saying? Rosh Chodesh Iker is... It sounds like it's giving it more Aliyahs, right? So although our practice is not this way. We read the... What do we do? What do we do? What's our practice?
We read three
Chanukah. What's that? We read three for Chanukah, then we add Rosh Chodesh at the end. Yeah,
I think so.
Yeah, we use the second Torah as the Rosh Chodesh Torah. So maybe our minug is not like this Gemara, or maybe we're reading this Gemara wrong and it really means the inverse. I'm not sure.
Like you said, the primary reading is that when it says Ein Mashgichim L'Chanukah, the primary reading is that of Rosh Chodesh, which should therefore come first and be more substantial.
And is that what we do? We read the Rosh Chodesh as the main reading? Anyone have a sitter? I'm over time. Here's the sitter. Let's look quickly. What's the reading for Chanukah?
Rosh Chodesh.
Rosh Chodesh. Rosh Chodesh is the Iker, and then Chanukah is added at the end.
Yeah, Chanukah is four.
Okay, good. So the answer is the Gemara got it right. The Gemara got it right. That's our minhag, meaning...
Chanukah is more. Rosh Chodesh is more, rather. Rosh Chodesh is more.
Oh, we start with Rosh Chodesh.
We start with Rosh.
Rosh Chodesh is more, so we read Rosh Chodesh. It's like Shabbos.
So we do three of Rosh Chodesh?
Yeah.
Rosh Chodesh, then Chanukah gets at the end. Okay.
Right.
Okay. Good. Chag Kasher V'Sameach, everyone.